Hi, I'm Valerie, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains. Welcome to The Beauty Brains, a show where real cosmetic chemists give you an inside look at the beauty product industry. This is episode 324. I'm your host, Valerie George, and with me today is Perry Romanowski. Hi, Perry.
Hello, Valerie. Welcome to the new year.
Happy New Year. Well, this is our second episode of the year, right?
No, the last episode was the New Year's Eve.
Oh.
So this is our first episode of the year. 23 is just flying by.
Yeah, already. It actually is kind of going very fast.
Yeah, we're mid-January already? Jeez.
Well, this episode's going fast, too. On today's show, we're going to answer questions about why aren't there more deodorants sold in cardboard packaging? Are there really any differences between salon and store-brand hair care products? Can cigarette ash remove hair dye stain from hands? And what, if anything, do microwavable hair caps do? But first, how have you been this year?
Oh, not bad. I just had my car got a flat tire, so I had to get that all fixed. And so what a way to kick off the year. But, you know.
Sounds expensive.
You know, those German cars are not cheap to fix, it turns out.
Wow, no.
You know, in the old days, you get a flat tire, you just fix it yourself. But nowadays, they make it so complicated and, you know,
yeah,
just easier to have someone else do it.
Yeah, well, Mr. Cosmetic Chemist had 3 flat tires last year, so
wow.
He is no longer allowed to drive the car.
You know, I remember when tires used to cost like $150. They're a lot more than that. What happened?
Well, I mean, especially on electric vehicles or import vehicles.
Sure. I mean, was the price of rubber, has it gone up that much? Come on. Wow.
Maybe.
It's shocking.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I got my... You know what I do to combine goals, because I love January. There's all these goals, and I made my list of 99 goals. I'm going to try to pare that down a little bit. But anyway, one of my goals is to run every day. And so I just ran to the car mechanic, which was, you know, 3.5 miles away. So
wow.
It's a perfect run.
Yeah, very cool. I have gotten a slow start to this year. Admittedly, I have.
Is it because you're floating away out there in California? I heard the mudslides and flash floods. It's kind of crazy there right now, huh?
I'm in a section of Los Angeles that's nestled upon the mountains in the great San Fernando Valley. And it is pretty gnarly out there. Streets are flooded. I have seen rushing water, which is also known as a flash flood.
Ah.
And it is torrentially downpouring. Now, the problem for me is I use rain music at nighttime when I sleep because
yeah.
I love rain pitter-patter on the roof. And we just don't usually get rain out here. But for the last few weeks in LA, it has been nothing but downpouring. The last 2 weeks are the worst. And during the day when I'm in the lab working, I cannot work with rain pitter-patter on the roof because my brain says it's nighttime.
Oh, you're starting to fall asleep at work.
It's awful. Yeah, wow. I'm very tired, needless to say. But the weather has been responsible for my slow start to this year, but I'm ready to make my goals list, make my to-do list, and make this an excellent year.
Yeah, well, looking forward to it, and let's make this an excellent show with some beauty science news.
So this is actually really funny. I saw a headline, Mark Anthony launches Repair Bond products.
And we're talking about hair, right?
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, like the Mark Anthony has launched his own hair bond repair line.
So not Cleopatra's Mark Anthony, but some celebrity guy, Mark Anthony?
Well, you know, J-Lo's ex-husband, Mark Anthony.
Oh,
wasn't that him? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But wait, so this is a celebrity launch then, Mark Anthony?
No, it's actually an existing hair care brand and has nothing to do with the celebrity.
Oh, got it. Yeah, I thought Mark Anthony was probably, what, a stylist or something?
I don't know who that Mark Anthony was, no, but probably. Sounds like a stylist name.
Yeah.
But it was funny because I thought it was like this singer, Mark Anthony, and I was like, what business does that guy have? So it was kind of funny. I thought, Everyone would get a kick out of that.
So the brand launched a Rescueplex collection. Can you say Olaplex knockoff? Is this that's what we got here?
pretty much.
Yeah, Bond builders are all the rage. Is there anything new in new science or anything here? Let's see. Salon quality at affordable prices. So we got that. I guess they're trying to follow what we in the business would call what... What do you call that when you emulate a more expensive? It's called class to mass. So when you when you take an expensive product, like a classy product, and you bring it to the mass market, we call that class to mass. So you take, you know, essentially you're knocking off the expensive stuff and selling it for less.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of brands do that.
I mean, it really is going to depend on the brand positioning, right? Because you know, Perricone is not going to do that. He's the expensive guy, right? So, you know.
Well, you know, but maybe there's someone more expensive he's ripping off.
I can't imagine. Do you see how pricey those products are?
There's more pricey. Trust me. Although I do like the Perricone products; they're actually really nice.
Sure. You know, I met Perricone once. He was at a Long Island SEC meeting where he was speaking.
Very cool. Yeah. I'm jealous.
Good guy, but boy, those products are expensive, at least to my taste. I mean, a class to mass would be like Olay knocking off a Perricone and bringing it to Target or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
So that's what we. So it looks like that's the strategy they're going with there. Now, I saw a, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. I saw a similar story out of The Guardian. It says, this dream cream is the most exciting development in hair care in a decade. And I'm like, whoa, what could this be? You know what it is?
What?
It's Living Proof has their triple bond complex. So another bonding product is out there.
Yeah. Well, it's funny they call it Dream Cream because I will say that is a little risque of a name. The former company I worked at, the founder of the company who's long since passed, legend has it in R&D that he wanted to call a product that's on the market today under a different name. He wanted to call it Dream Cream, and he was heavily advised against it because of, you know, it just, you know, might not resonate with everyone. So they had to call it something else, but it was pretty funny. Have you tried the Living Proof Triple Bond Complex?
I have not tried it. I have not tried it, but apparently it's a revolution in hair care. But it uses, you know, acetyl alcohol, glycerol stearate, oleate, isopentadiol. It's with all these Bond products. They add all of these regular hair care things, conditioner stuff, and then the Bond ingredient. And it's like, if you're adding all that stuff is just going to wipe out any bonding effect that you might have seen, right? And so... Mm-hmm. Maybe on a microscopic level, there's something going on, but most likely, if someone's using this, they aren't going to be able to tell the difference between this and just like an intensive conditioner, at least from my look at it.
Yeah, well, it is a really nice product. You know, it's nice, but I found the article interesting because it felt kind of like an advertisement article.
It did.
Yeah, where they had like a little inside look on it. So I don't know. I mean, it's a nice product.
You know what else I found funny there? The author of the article was really impressed because it made her hair 8 times stronger. And I'm like, you know, Fructise makes your hair 10 times stronger. Come on. what's going on here? Eight times. 8 times is so, you know, 1996. Fructise has been doing 10 times since 2002.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, boy. One other big thing has come up this week, or I should say the last couple weeks in the industry. Congress has passed new cosmetic regulations. It's called the Modernization of Cosmetics Regulation Act of 2022. It's kind of a mouthful, so we just say MOCRA in the industry, but it is a pretty nice restructuring and overhaul of the current cosmetic regulatory framework, giving the FDA more power.
Yeah, they'll actually have the power to issue recalls. Now the power to do recalls, they have it, but they can only suggest it. That's, you can't compel a company to do that. It's in your best interest to recall if the FDA says to, but you don't absolutely have to. And now you have to. This bill also is going to require adverse effects to be recorded.
And reported.
And reported, yep. Yeah. which is new. But you know what else? But I would say for big companies, they were already doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So it's really not going to be a change from a consumer standpoint, you know. And then there's also a clause in there. Most of this does not apply to companies that sell less than $1 million a year.
Which is a lot of companies.
Which is every, you know, all of those people who are like Etsy, selling stuff on Etsy and stuff, and it doesn't apply to them anymore. So that that's a pretty significant hole, I think, in the regulations.
Well, I would still hope that small brands, home crafters, entrepreneurs still take the regulations seriously, even though it doesn't legally apply to them from a registration and compliance perspective. You know, the goal for any company, I would think, is to grow your brand.
Right.
And increase your sales and maybe take on investors or even maybe eventually acquisition. Everyone dreams of a multi-million dollar acquisition, right? So in order to do that, you have to act like a big brand. And so I hope that even though if, you know, as a small brand, you don't qualify, watch the regulations closely because one day you might have to restructure your business to make sure you are compliant.
Yeah.
And I would recommend to do that sooner than later.
Big company, small company, it's still illegal to sell unsafe cosmetics. So you have to still, even no matter how many you sell, you have to still be able to prove that your products are safe. So there is that. It's not like you could just, you know, whip together any kind of, you know, 10 ingredients on your kitchen table and then start selling it. It's more complicated than that. I'm sure the FDA will issue small business guidelines. They actually already have that.
They do have them, yeah.
And so that's probably what will happen.
More to come on that, yeah.
All right, should we talk a little clean beauty?
Yeah. So this New York Times article came out. Did you read it?
I did read it, and it just, it looked like all the regular tropes about clean beauty. There was nothing new in here, right? They did the whole EU banned 1,600 ingredients. The FDA only bans 11. But I mean, to their credit, they did say in parentheses, they said, well, most of those 1,600 are not used in cosmetics. I'm like,
but the fact that they even put it in there was a little annoying. It's like, okay, if it doesn't mean anything, why use that information, right? I mean, clearly this person isn't on the side of industry.
Right, right. So it was, I would say on the whole, it was unbalanced and sort of fear-mongering, but a little less fear-mongering than usual. I did notice that one of our own was interviewed in the article, and sadly, he was recommending that consumers go see what the EWG says about ingredients.
You know, not my first resource I would pick.
No, I mean, I would say the EWG Skin Deep database is useful to find the names of ingredients or to find like what ingredient, if you want the ingredient list, for example, of a product, you can look it up there. And they usually have that. I don't know the accuracy of it. I'm sure there's some typos here and there, but it's pretty much going to have it. But as far as their judgments about the safety ratings of ingredients, it's worthless, really. And it's just fear-mongering. And so to have a cosmetic chemist suggest that consumers go use that, it's unfortunate.
Yeah, definitely not what I would do.
Right.
I mean, we predicted just a week ago or maybe even 11 days ago, you know, if we want to get technical, a little things about clean beauty. I mean, with articles like this and the consumers reading it, do you think it's going to help phase any of that out? Or do you think it's only going to reinforce this paradigm that some products are cleaner than others?
I have to say that with this new legislation passed, which actually isn't going to really impact anything for a year because the FDA has a year to kind of sort it all out and it really wasn't funded. But with that, it's going to be harder for NGOs to make the case that, oh, the cosmetic industry hasn't been changed the regulations since 1938 and is wholly antiquated, because you could just point to, hey, there was this thing that was passed in 2022 and has been updated. Now, the details of it don't really matter. It's just that that something was passed as far as consumers go.
Well, I think they will always find something to be unhappy about.
Yeah, but honestly, this story felt a little, out of time. This felt like a story that should have been written 2 years ago, maybe.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I was surprised to see it. Maybe it's been in the works.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, never is better than now, right. Is better than never.
She's just a slow writer, apparently.
Oh, man. I think we should move on to beauty science questions.
Let's do it.
Our first question comes to us from Jackie. Jackie says, is there a technical reason it's so hard to find antiperspirants in cardboard packaging? There's 1 million deodorants emblazoned aluminum-free. I want all the aluminum. I wonder if there's something about it that makes it hard to sell in a cardboard tube. Or do marketers just assume that anyone who cares about the planet is also an anti-science loon who doesn't understand the data that aluminum doesn't cause cancer?
Oh, well, fascinating question, Jackie, and thanks for that.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. She says deodorant. She must mean antiperspirant. Mm-hmm. Although I suppose all antiperspirants are deodorants, but not all deodorants are antiperspirants, right?
Very philosophical, but yes.
Sort of the protein enzyme sort of a thing. But anyway, and when she's talking about aluminum, she's talking about the active ingredient in an antiperspirant, which the aluminum zirconium salts, that those sorts of mm-hmm. things, right? Mm-hmm. She's not talking about the aluminum packaging, because you could put a deodorant in aluminum packaging, right? I guess, right?
You could. It'd be hot when it's filling, and you'd be like, ow, 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 right. Ow.
If it's the summer, it's kind of hot to put it. Okay, let's get to this. Why don't we find more cardboard packaging? And I think ultimately it comes down to a couple of things, but one of the biggest is price.
Yeah, cardboard paper tubes are very expensive. Even if you buy tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, they are very, very expensive. A couple bucks, in fact, expensive.
Right, much more expensive than a plastic container, which is probably, I don't know, 30 cents a container?
Yeah, very cheap. Yeah. So I think part of it is cost. The other part of it is, I think from a manufacturing feasibility standpoint, cardboard's a little bit more difficult to work with. And this is because deodorants, antiperspirants, they're typically filled hot or at some kind of warm temperature.
Right.
So the product is a fluid and flowing into the tube. Now, paper tubes are lined. They typically have a synthetic wax polymer on them or a natural wax.
Or, you know, a plastic.
Yeah, to prevent the product that's inside the tube from seeping through to the cardboard, right? Yeah. So it's this protective barrier. However, if the product is filled too hot into the tube, you're going to get some melting of this liner, whether it be wax or some kind of petroleum-based polymer, and the product will soak the cardboard anyway. So it does take lower fill temperatures and some know-how to work with the paper tubes when putting product into them.
Yeah, that just makes it more difficult to use current filling lines to make the same product. And I think ultimately also consumers are used to using a nice lightweight plastic thing. You know, these cardboard containers, if they get a little bit wet, they're going to start to get mushy. And, you know, you have to be a responsible cardboard user. You have to be a lot more thoughtful about using it. And it's just ultimately, I think, you know, consumers who have less plastic in their life, which actually that's one of my goals for the year is to consume less plastic.
Oh, very cool. Yeah.
And you know what my main thing I'm going to do?
What?
Instead of buying the 20-ounce soda pop, I'm going to go with the 12-ounce cans of 12-ounce aluminum cans, right?
Nice. And your health will improve because you're consuming less soda per consumption.
I question that, but yeah, I'll go with it.
Well, a bottle is 16 or 20 ounces.
20 ounces,
and a can's 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then I'll probably just get two cans, so now I'm drinking 24.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. The best laid plans. So for those reasons, I think that's why you don't find more cardboard in deodorants and antiperspirants. But as far as do marketers just assume anyone who cares about the planet is an anti-science loon? I don't think so. In fact, I don't think caring about the planet makes you an anti-science loon. So I think scientists actually do care about the planet, and science thinkers should care about the planet, and because you know, I think it's probably the biggest issue we're facing, and plastics is a big problem. We are polluting the planet incredibly with plastics. It's just everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, it's a low enough impact where it's not affecting us, but, you know, give it 20 years or 30 years, plastic will be everywhere, and it's like an experiment. We don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, if anyone who works at an antiperspirant or deodorant brand is listening, maybe check and see if there is some value or desire from consumers to have their aluminum-based antiperspirants in cardboard packaging. Could be a product opportunity.
Yeah, there you go. Innovation. You want me to take the next question?
Yeah.
This one comes to us from Linda. She says, I understand that when it comes to shampoo and conditioners, the ones from the drugstore do the job just as well as the ones for the more expensive ones. However, I've read and heard from my aunt, who is a hairdresser, and she's been one for over 30 years, the professional products are better because the ingredients are more concentrate. Is this true? And I know you have spoken a lot about hair care in the podcast, but is there any truth to this about professional brands being better than drugstore? Also, I've seen people say, or I've heard people say, that when you invest in more expensive hair care, you are also supporting the company's research to develop the products, which makes sense. What are your thoughts on this, Valerie? Coming from a company formerly that was a salon brand.
Well, they are a salon brand, but I was formerly at the company that was
right.
A salon brand.
Although that didn't mean you dressed formally when you went to work. You just previously were there.
Formerly,
all
yeah.
Right.
So basically, you know, this is something that is often said, and I've always incredibly disagreed with it because I think it is a very undermining sales tactic. If you are a salon brand and you can get people to believe that salon products are higher quality products than anything else you can get because they are made with different ingredients, higher quality ingredients, I think that's a real disservice to the consumer because it's not true. Perry at a mass brand had access to the same ingredients that I do or did at a salon brand,
yeah.
Right?
Everybody uses the same chemical suppliers, you know, your Steppens, your McIntyre's, your BASFs. Like there's no special salon line of raw material. So we all had access to the same stuff.
There's no ingredient supplier who's going to say, whoa, you're in right. Walmart. I'm not going to sell to you, right? Their goal is to sell to everyone.
Right.
Yeah.
They want to sell as much of those chemicals as they can to as many companies.
One of the things that makes me more upset. Now, I will say there are some differences because, and this isn't in every case, there are formulas where this probably isn't true. You do get a little bit more money in a salon or prestige level product than you would at mass market. What do you think, Perry?
Yeah, I think the formulators, when they're creating a salon brand, they don't have to look at the cost of the formula as closely. When I was working on the VO5 brand, you know how much it costs for a 16-ounce bottle of VO5? The formula cost?
28 cents.
It cost 10 cents.
Whoa.
Yeah, 10 cents a pound. We got that formula down to 10 cents. Now, I worked on a cost savings project, and so when I first started on the brand, I think our shampoo was 12 cents a bottle. I got that thing down to 10 cents a bottle. And we do consumer research, so you test it, you know, the same product and a cheaper product against it, see if consumers can tell a difference. They couldn't, you know, if I could, I shaved off 2 cents, you know, we're selling 40 million bottles a year, and 2 cents is like a $400,000 a year's cost savings. So it was like huge.
So that's a lot of money.
And salon brands are not as compelled to do that because even if they were able to shave off 2 cents in their formula, that's not really going to make a big impact because they don't sell 40 million bottles of shampoo in a year. They're going to sell a couple million. So, you know, is it really worth it to risk that potential change in quality to make your formula a little less expensive? Not really, especially when you have, you know, VO5 was selling for $1 a bottle. The salon brands are selling for $20 or $25 a bottle. So there's...
But I think the cost is adjusted accordingly, right? The higher you're selling your product for, the more money you have to put into the formula. So
yeah, but there is a limit. I mean, it's not like Matrix is going to be selling, you know, their formula costs $3 a bottle.
Well, I think you'd be surprised. I mean, the budgets are a whole lot bigger than 10 cents
right.
Per pound, for sure. Now, it doesn't mean that the formulas are any better quality or that the ingredients are more concentrated. I think they're just different. They have different emollients in them, different anti-comb agents.
Sure.
Maybe you could afford to put 5% of a behene trimonium chloride into a product. There is that opportunity, but I don't know. I still love mass market shampoo.
Sure.
I love Pantene. I love Garnier Fructis Sleek. They're very good.
I've said it before on the show, I think, where I was on a project where we wanted to create the best performing formula in the industry, whether it was salon brand or mass market brand. And we bought all the top selling salon brands. We bought all the top selling mass market brands. And on a blinded basis, we took all the containers, we put them in white bottles so nobody could see it. And then we sent out, each SKU was sent out to 100 consumers. And they used it for 2 weeks and then they scored it. And whether it was a salon brand or it was a mass market brand, the brand that always won was Pantene versus anything. So I think, you know, the folks over at P&G, they sort of got to, and, you know, a lot of it was probably just people love that fragrance or something. I don't know, but it's a good product. But on a blinded basis, you're not going to see better than, say, a Pantene.
The other comment that is interesting, and I've heard this before as well, when you invest in more expensive hair care, you're also supporting the company's R&D to develop the products. In theory, it does make sense because, you know, R&D is not cheap. You have to employ chemists,
sure,
which costs money. You have to have a room. You have to have equipment. You have to maybe send products out for third-party testing if you don't have the equipment. It totally makes sense.
Although I would say, shouldn't they have already done that before they developed the product? So it's all a new product.
Even for future products, right?
Future products.
But I will also say there's a whole lot of companies, including salon brands, believe it or not, that aren't doing their own R&D.
Right.
They're using contract manufacturers, which is not, I wouldn't exactly call it research and development, right? You
right.
have people pumping formulas out to customers and that kind of stuff. So I would say not always true. Now, if you wanted to support a salon brand to support their R&D efforts, I would actually look and see which companies are still doing their own independent research
right.
and development and buy from those companies.
Yeah. And honestly, it's not a lot of them. So
No, it's like a handful.
Right.
It's like the big guys. And
really, aren't most of the salon brands owned by L'Oreal anyway?
Yeah.
Matrix,
they have
Bialage,
a pretty big
Kerastase.
They have a pretty
yeah.
big hold on the market. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much. The one thing I will say is that when you do buy salon products at the salon, you are in some way supporting that specific salon because they usually will get a kickback or kickback's not there, a residual or an affiliate program fee, so they make some money on those sales.
And you're supporting the stylists. Usually the stylists get commissions.
Yeah.
So the salon will make money, the stylist will make commission. So I honestly think that's the better reason to buy
right.
salon products is to support the stylist behind the chair because that is an important part of their income.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, next question comes to us from Samantha.
Samantha says, what is the scientific basis for the claim that cigarette ash is effective in removing hair dye stains from skin?
Wait, your skin gets stained by hair dye?
It definitely does.
How about
sure.
Step one, don't put hair dye on your skin.
Step one, use gloves right. in all stages if you can to limit your exposure to chemicals. But two, it does happen.
Yeah.
Even, you know, I wear gloves in the lab and I'll get home and my fingernails will be black or I'll have like a weird hair dye splotch on my arm. Like it just gets everywhere.
Yeah, I can see that.
So have you heard that cigarette ash can remove hair dye stains from skin, Perry? Because I have not, and I've worked in a working salon. Granted, it was a research and development salon with stylists. I've been in hundreds of salons. I know many, many stylists, and it's one trick I have not heard of.
I had not heard of this either, but doing a little internet sleuthing on this topic, there seems to be some people that have, right? And it seems like this might be one of those secret salon tricks that they don't want you to know about or something. it's like you mix the cigarette ash with some shampoo, and that's supposed to be able to help remove the stain a little easier than just the shampoo alone, I guess. So I guess we'd have to think of, like, what's the composition of cigarette ash?
Well, I think ash, whether it's cigarette ash, wood ash, generally contains trace minerals in it. Not just carbon from the burn, but minerals like potassium and sodium and that kind of thing. And
those will become oxides.
Yep, and then contribute a little bit of alkalinity.
Sure.
Or increase the pH of the composition. In the salon world, you can also, like, let's say, you over-deposited color on someone's hair. You could take shampoo and put bleach into the shampoo and create a shampoo cap, it's called.
Okay.
To help remove some of the excess color. So my instinct is that the cigarette ash is helping increase the alkalinity of the composition, which is helping remove some of the colorant from the skin.
That's assuming that it does work at all. this might be just
if it does work at all. Well, I mean, it really could, because back in the days of the Gauls, which was a long time ago, they actually used to take wood ash and put it in with tallow and apply it to their hair, and then go out in the sun, and it would actually lighten their hair because of the alkalinity of the wood ash, which is why I think the cigarette ash maybe works this way. But on many other levels, this is like a horrible idea.
Did you just say the Gauls? Like, what? Is that some sort of ancient civilization or something? What?
Yeah, they were like the people who lived in Ireland and Scotland, right? Or Belgium? I think the Gauls were Belgium.
I don't know. I do know the capital of Belgium is Brussels, but
do you think any Gauls lived there? I think a long time ago they did.
I thought you were talking about seagulls.
The Gauls, G-A-U-L, and gotcha. I'm pretty sure that they were Belgian, what is today Belgian?
So they didn't like their red hair? Is that, no, I guess if it's Belgium, they didn't have the red hair, right?
Well, they loved lightening their locks, and the Romans took it as inspiration. So gotcha. My instinct is it's working this way, but I would not put cigarette ash on your skin, because they also, ashes from cigarettes also contain many other compounds and chemicals.
Yeah.
That you should probably decrease your risk exposure to.
So are you going to put cigars ashes on it instead?
Yeah. I mean, I think our cigars a little healthier?
No, they're not healthier.
Well, it's a question. I mean, do they contain all the synthetic chemicals and compounds and arsenic and that kind of stuff?
Okay. All right. Now you got me thinking. I think overall they're both bad.
Yeah, probably not great. You know, Ulysses S. Grant died of a throat tumor from his cigar smoking.
Oh, you know, one of my favorite things to do with ash is, and this used to work better back in the days when you would go to bars and people have cigarettes that they smoke.
Yeah.
I do this trick where I take a little ash and I put it on the back of somebody's hand and I do all these jiggery pokery, and you turn your hand over and then the ash is on the palm of their hand. And it's like, whoa, how'd you do it? So it's one of these great magic tricks I could do. But now nobody smokes in bars anymore. Thankfully, really. it used to be disgusting to go to bars, but it's much better.
And disgusting that you would pick up the cigarette ashes and rub it all over the hands.
Yeah, now that you think about it. I don't find that. I think if you were touching the buds where it was in somebody's mouth, I don't find ashes to be.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah.
Right? I don't find the ash to be any more disgusting than, I don't know, dirt. Right?
It smells a million times worse than dirt.
Well, yeah, it does. It does. I wonder if Mother Dirt is going to come out with, like, Mother Ash. Like,
ooh, that's a very good question.
And
it could be a hair dye removal from skin product.
You know, if you don't want to put cigarette ash all over your skin. Another option is to do a little exfoliating. That might help to remove the dye, because the dye molecules, while they can stain the skin, it's usually at the top layers of the epidermis.
Yeah.
And so a little exfoliating, it could help too.
But I will say, as someone who typically has stained fingers, and again, I wear gloves when I work.
Sure.
The problem is you take the gloves off and boop, you ran into a little blob of hair color somewhere. You look gross. I always have to explain to people, like, don't look at my fingernails or my fingers, because it's not what you think it is. Sometimes it looks like poo. It does.
Oh, my. Well.
You can cut that out of the show if it's too much.
No, but that's funny.
TMI.
What are you talking about? That's funny.
But really, it's just like, don't look at my fingers. Actually, one time I got my fingernail stained. I thought I had melanoma like Bob Marley.
Really?
Wow. I did. Yeah, because it wasn't moving for the longest time. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have cancer. And it turns out it was hair color.
Oh boy. Well, hair color doesn't cause cancer that way, if at all. So
I should have tried the cigarette ash.
Yeah.
Now I know. And actually, you know, I would say, let me try this the next time I'm making a batch of hair color. But then I'd have to figure out how to get the cigarette ash.
Oh yeah, right. Well, there are still some bars. No, you can still buy cigarettes.
I'll just go down the street to the people living on the sidewalk. And
don't you work next to people who smoke? You can just bum a cigarette off
yeah,
of your neighbors.
Yeah, I could do that. Well, it's California. Like, I think less than 10% of the population smokes.
Oh well. All right. Speaking of smoking, we got one more question.
Wow, from an aspiring lawyer. Aspiring lawyer says, are microwavable hair caps effective? What effect does warmth have on the hair? And would it improve oil absorption to restore and improve hair health?
Restoring and improving hair health.
Sounds pretty incredible.
I have to be honest with you. I knew there were caps like you'd get in a salon. That's been forever. But there's microwave caps. Huh? I mean, I guess it shouldn't be surprising.
Well, one, I was surprised at the cost a little bit once I did look these up. But honestly, and there's some really cute ones too. But honestly, pretty cool invention if you ask me. So sometimes when you go to a salon and you get a deep treatment done, they will put the treatment on your hair and the wet hair. And the recommendation will be to sit under a dryer or a steamer for a certain period of time, maybe 5 to 15 minutes, depending on the level of treatment necessary. And what this does is applies heat to the head and heats the product up on the hair. And then the product is rinsed and removed and styled like usual. Now, not everyone has a hood at home. You certainly should not stick your head in a microwave.
No.
To heat it up. And so this little cap, you pop in the microwave, you warm it up, and then you put it over your head, and it's going to mimic a hood at a salon.
Yeah. I mean, it could feel good. So what's it really doing for your hair?
Well, I will say that heat does work in a lot of applications to improve penetration of ingredients into hair that would penetrate anyway. And I think this is just like basic physical chemistry.
Right.
When you apply heat to a system, you increase the speed at which the molecules move. And so they may be able to penetrate better. Additionally, when you apply heat, the product tends to thin a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And this also aids in its ability to coat the hair fiber.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, you can make some good rationales for it doing something. At the end of the day, if you do this, if you use the heat cap or you just use a hair conditioner or a leave-in conditioner, I doubt you'll notice any difference in your hair. But, you know, hair treatments or beauty treatments are not just about the end result. They're also about the experience, and it might be kind of fun to put a warm little toasted muffin on your head. I don't know.
Yeah, well, we did a lot of studies with heat on the hair.
Yeah.
Because a stylist always wants to know the many different ways you can use a product that are recommended or not recommended. They will do it anyway. And we did look at every conditioner or treatment we did. We did look at, okay, what happens if you apply heat while it's on the hair? And you know, at 5 minutes, a difference wasn't really noticed, but over 15 minutes with heat application, you could notice a difference in the feel and look of hair. I don't know how long this cap stays warm.
I can't imagine it's a, you know, that long. I don't.
Yeah, but I don't think 5 minutes is a long enough time to make a difference.
And the other thing is just, I'm trying to think of like the physics of this. Like when you're talking about a cap in a salon, they usually have air blowing in there and circulating and coming out.
Yeah.
This is just you heat it up and it's going to be sort of a passive transference of the heat and it'll dissipate pretty quickly.
I'm like, should I get one?
You should get one and report back.
I should. Yeah, there's like some cute ones on there.
Not until after you've gotten rid of all that stuff you were supposed to get rid of in December.
I know. Well, we have to do our giveaway because I actually ended up taking it to the lab and hiding it.
Gotcha.
So that Mr. Cosmetic Chemist got a little bit off my back.
Oh,
but
good. Well,
don't worry, guys. He's on to me. He knows where it is.
Well, we do have audience members asking how they can get Valerie's stuff. And next show, we are going to announce the giveaway contest.
Now that we have it legally figured out.
That's right.
Or we will. Yeah.
That's right.
Well, Perry, do you hear the music? That is all the time we have for today.
You know what I do hear? I don't hear the music yet, but I do hear my outdoor cats looking in my window and meowing. I guess
they're hungry. Do they want dinner?
You know how many cats there are? There are like 5 cats. So a goal of mine this year, get these 5 cats spayed and neutered.
Oh, very cool. That's one of the 99?
Yeah, one of the 99.
You're a really good person.
No, we'll see if I get it done.
Well, thanks again for listening to the show, everybody. If you get a chance, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. That's going to help other people find the show in the show ratings and ensure we have a full docket of beauty questions to answer.
Yeah, we do prefer a 5 rating if you do that. If you want to give less, just don't even go there. But and if you have a question, though, you can get your voice on the show. Just record it on your smartphone and then email it to thebeautybrains@gmail.com. We also take just regular email questions if you have those too. So follow that. Or in the show notes, there is a form to fill out to get your question answered. And some of the questions we had today came from there. And of course,
The Beauty Brains are also on Patreon. One thing you didn't hear on this show today was ads. And just the other day, I had 2 brands contacting me asking if they could advertise on our show. And I had to say no, because we are supported by our patrons like you to keep this podcast ad-free. So if you want to support us and keep the show ad-free, please head over to patreon.com/thebeautybrains. Also, don't forget to follow us on our various social media accounts. On Instagram, we're at TheBeautyBrains2018. On Twitter, we're at TheBeautyBrains. And we have a Facebook page and maybe a TikTok. Depends. Well, thanks again for listening, everyone. And remember, be brainy about your beauty.
Thanks, everybody. Kittens.